begins at the end of your comfort zone.
Welcome to the Health Science Coach Podcast. My name is Drew Garner, and I'm a health science and physical education teacher. This is a podcast to help students, parents, and recent graduates learn about pathways into healthcare and sports medicine careers. These industry professionals lay out how their experiences have helped them get to where they are now. If you enjoy this content, please subscribe to the channel or download through your podcast player. Thanks again for spending some time with us today. Now let's dig in. All right. Welcome, Rachel. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Can you give us a little detail about your career and what an occupational therapist does? And then kind of also what you do as a program director at Cleveland University?
Sure, I'd love to. So occupational therapy works with people who have a disability or an injury to get them functioning and doing the things that they need to do on a daily basis. So we call that occupations. Yeah. And those occupations are the things that occupy your day to day. So for all of us, we have to get dressed, we have to shower, we have to eat. Those activities of daily living, just things that we have to do on a daily basis, hygiene, brushing your teeth, those kinds of things. But then that also goes into those other like life skill kinds of activities like budgeting, going shopping, taking care of your pets or taking care of children. It can be just home maintenance, making sure a person can clean their toilet or do the dishes, take out the trash, those kinds of things. So occupational therapy is very holistic. So we look at the whole person. So we're not just looking at the physical or the mental. We're looking at cognition. We're looking at spiritual aspects. So we want to kind of encompass all the things the person is into those occupations and how that affects their ability to do those occupations.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense by just, you know, being able to live the healthy daily life and being able to do those functions properly. So as program director at Cleveland, what all does that entail as far as, you know, working with students or teaching classes?
So as a program director, I'm responsible for the outcomes of the program. I'm responsible for the accreditation and some of the administrative aspects. So creating policies, creating procedures, making sure classes are covered with instructors. I also do some of the teaching within the program. My specialty area has been mental health.
Okay.
And so I teach our mental health class. And I also teach our introduction to occupational therapy course, so which talks about the history and the philosophy of occupational therapy, and then some of those really basic core principles that occupational therapists use throughout their practice. And so I love teaching. That's probably one of my favorite pieces to what I do. I tell my students regularly, this is my happy place when I'm in the classroom, because I enjoy being with them and sharing my knowledge and encouraging them to learn. I do enjoy being a program director. I enjoy some of that administrative component, but it does come with its challenges because you have to work with other people who don't always understand why you're doing what you're doing. There's a fine line between, navigating some of those administrative aspects and then also doing the things I love, which is educating people on occupational therapy. So,
yeah. So the kind of piggyback off that, you talked about the mental health aspect of it. You studied undergraduate at Culver Stockton College and you got your degree in psychology. How did you kind of, starting off in as your educational pathway, how did you kind of choose psychology and Culver Stockton to be a starting point for you?
So I'll back up just a wee bit. Senior year of high school, from the beginning of my senior year, I kind of knew I wanted to go and I wanted to be a teacher. I kind of was like I was that girl who in junior high school was like, I'm going to be a teacher. That's what I'm going to do. And I got to my senior year of high school and I was forced to take this class on it was not really home economics, but it was like life skills class.
Right.
Which I was a little frustrated about because I'm like, I already know how to budget. I already know how to cook. Like, I knew how to do everything. But the one thing that I got out of this class was that she made us write a paper, a research paper on a profession that we didn't know a lot about but was interesting.
Okay.
And I had, being a senior in high school, I had been getting all these flyers about for different colleges. And a lot of them had pre-occupational therapy programs. And I'm like, what is occupational therapy? So I did this research paper on occupational therapy and really thought this could be something cool. Like, because a lot of my idea of teaching was put into occupational therapy because we teach people skills.
Right.
And so, plus it was in healthcare. And with healthcare came, you know, some stability because there, you know, there's always stability in healthcare, which is why healthcare is a great opportunity for career. So I decided to go the occupational therapy route and chose Culver Stockton because they had a pre-OT program. And I could take all of the prerequisites for an OT degree, for a master's in OT, at Culver Stockton. And psychology was one of the degrees that was common 20 plus years ago to take for occupational therapy programs. It was usually either biology or psychology. It's changed a little bit because we now have more like exercise science degrees and other degrees that are still really applicable to OT. So at that time it was psychology or biology, and I chose psychology because I really enjoyed it. And it really kind of laid some groundwork for me. I think once I got to OT school and realized that occupational therapists worked in mental health.
Right.
Because at the time of applying to OT school, I didn't know that OTs worked in mental health. And, you know, you always kind of find your niche and your group of people that you just kind of click with. And when I got to OT school, the mental health crew were my people.
Yeah.
And I just knew it, you know. So right. While we do deal with mental health aspects with everybody we work with, those people with chronic mental illness and who really struggle with mental health issues have just been the people I've worked with over my career.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, any type of therapy, if someone's going through physical therapy, any type of training, there's always occupational therapy. There's always that mental health aspect of, you know, it's going to be hard at some point in time for this person to overcome the obstacle that they're going through. And so just having that mental health background, I feel like it really helps in, you know, talking with the person through their struggle.
I tell my students regularly, if you're dealing with human beings, you're going to deal with mental health.
Yeah.
Because we all have mental health.
Absolutely. And then, you know, even the last 2 years, everybody's been seeing that more and more common.
Absolutely. It's definitely come to the forefront, especially with healthcare professionals. Yep. Really putting that component out there has been really beneficial for a lot of people, I think.
I think so, too. So for your master's program, you went and studied occupational therapy and your master's in OT. You went to St. Ambrose University. How did you choose to go to St. Ambrose after you were done with your program at Culver Stockton?
So I decided to, I applied to a few different schools for OT. One was here in Kansas City with Rockhurst University, and then I applied at St. Ambrose. Both programs are really comparable. They're both really great about focusing on the community and really focusing on, focusing on the intervention aspects. There are a lot of schools out there, like, and I think it really depends on just the culture that you're looking for. St. Ambrose, I just felt like fit me really well. It was a small school, and I felt like it was close-knit, and you could build a good, like, there was a good OT community there, and so it just kind of felt right to kind of move in that direction, and I felt like I got a solid education. coming out of it. I felt like I was very, very prepared for the workforce.
And where is St. Ambrose located?
St. Ambrose is located in Davenport, Iowa.
Okay. Okay. Just trying to get a preference.
The what? Southeast corner.
Yep. Yep. So then after those rotations and those settings totaled out per location.
Yep. So they're 8 weeks apiece.
Okay. Okay. So that makes sense. So what are some of the classes, you know, they take some of the associate's level coursework to get their associate's degree, you know, some English, math, whatever those kind of look like, just those general, Ed, what are the class breakdown for the OTA program? How many courses are there and what are some of those courses look like?
So the first trimester are very foundational courses, things like kinesiology, the history and philosophy of OT. We also talk about development across the lifespan, and we look at breaking down the way we call it activity analysis, which is the way we break down activities and kind of view the world in a sense. And so that's very foundational. All of that information then gets taken into the second and third trimesters in terms of intervention. So that second trimester, students take a pediatrics class and they take a physical rehabilitation and disability class along with level one fieldwork. So in these intervention courses, they also get to do some clinic work.
Okay.
To kind of get a feel for what that setting looks like.
Right.
They may or may not be working with OT practitioners, but they at least get a kind of an idea of what occupational therapy can look like in a setting. And then that third trimester, they take the mental health class along with a clinical experience. And then that last, our trimesters are broken up into 8 week modules. And that second module in the third trimester is like a management class and a practicum course, which really brings everything full circle, making sure students are ready to go out on their level two experiences, their full-time experiences, because we want them as prepared as possible before they go out and they're in the clinic full-time.
Yeah, that's a lot of good stuff right there. Just punched, you know, like you said, those three trimesters back to back with all that information included in there. Let's look at some of the academic admissions requirements and application procedures.
So we require anatomy and physiology 1 and 2, general psychology and medical terminology before you can even take any other courses. We encourage students to take an English composition course, I think it's intermediate math. And then we also have a math course here on campus that is kind of geared toward the program. It has a little statistics. It has a little bit of some more real life math situation kinds of things that are a little more applicable to our program. We created it specifically for our radiology technology and OTA programs.
Perfect. Yeah.
And then we also require speech. You have to be able to talk to people in this field. Like,
weird,
you have
right?
to be able to communicate really well. So being able to kind of get over your fear of public speaking is important. So that speech class, we also look at diversity. And we have a communications and a diversity course that we require because we work with diverse populations.
Right.
From children all the way to older adults in every economic background, from every from rural to urban core, like we're everywhere. So you have to understand diversity and be comfortable in that place.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's one of the things I think that, you know, public speaking, communication and diversity, I think is going to be something that's going to start seeing more prevalent in programs like this as a part of being able to talk to anyone and everyone and be all inclusive, I think is going to be something, a big push. So it's exciting to see that you guys already have that included in your program. As far as a perfect, let's envision in our head what your ideal student would be that's coming in to become an OTA, what's that person some traits or qualities that this person may have, as well as some stuff they may have done in the past?
No, I think it's a great question. I think some of the qualities are being okay with being in people's in their space, in their personal space, and in their bubble. Because we as OT practitioners very regularly are up close and personal, and we are in intimate situations with them, you know, showering, dressing, toileting, all those things. So being okay, being in that, in a person's bubble is kind of important. Now, you'll get there if you're not 100%, but because you just get used to it.
Right.
But it's, you know, being okay. Also, knowing boundaries, like having healthy boundaries. I think that can be really beneficial. Being able to communicate easily with people, starting conversations. Mm-hmm. I would say small talk, you know, like being comfortable having small talk with people, because that's where you start building rapport.
Right.
With people and getting them engaged in what you're doing. Computer skills. I mean, I feel like that shouldn't need to be said because everybody uses a computer these days.
Yep.
But a lot of our documentation, almost all of our documentation, is done electronically now.
Yeah.
So being comfortable using a computer. Also having solid writing skills, because we as practitioners have to be able to communicate in a written format with documentation. We need to be able to be clear and concise in what we say and what the treatment session was with our clients.
Right.
So having solid written skills are really important. And I would say being professional, and I don't, you know, dressing professionally, but also presenting in a professional way. That I tell students on a regular basis, if you come in to any situation in a professional way and in a confident place, I can teach you the skills you need.
Yeah.
Like if you're lacking in skills, it's okay. I can teach you that. But as long as you come in with an ability to be professional and also being teachable, I think is one of those places that students don't always think about. Like, you need to be open to feedback. You need to take correction. It's not meant to be mean. It's meant to make you better.
Right.
And so being teachable, I think, is, you know, ego needs to be put aside because it's not about you. I tell students all the time, therapy is not about you. It's about your client. Right? The world doesn't revolve around you. It's about your client. And so putting aside your own personal biases and your opinions and really focusing on what the client needs and wants is going to be so much more important than any other thing that you're doing with your client. If they know you're in it for them, you're going to get them to buy into what you're doing.
Yeah. I like all those answers. I mean, that really kind of sums up, you know, being able to work with other people and being able to do those things. Like you said, be in their bubble, be able to be professional, and learning the skills is the reason why you're there for school. And that's why you come to learn how to do those things. And if you're not passionate about what you're doing, then it's kind of going to, you'll find out that very quickly.
Yeah, you're right.
As far as professional development, what type of professional development do occupational therapy assistants and occupational therapists have to do to keep up their credentials and license?
So we are, as OTAs and OTs, we are either registered or certified with our national certification body. And then whichever state we work in, we have to have a license. Both of those entities require us to do continuing education credits.
Okay.
And that can be, they have a variety of options.
Right.
In order to do that. A lot of times I will attend conferences. So Kansas Occupational Therapy Association has an annual conference. the American Occupational Therapy Association does an annual conference. And okay. if you go to those conferences, you can get a lot of continuing education credits at one time, which is nice. And usually it's worth the money. There are lots of other opportunities. If you want to learn specific skills, there are a lot of different people who provide continuing education seminars and workshops that you can attend to get specific skills within your setting.
Okay. Yeah, that works out really well. It kind of goes with the next question is, you know, by working with somebody that may be needing to go shopping or maybe needs to learn how to tie their shoe or put on their jacket or make their beds or take a shower, there's so many different things that or skills that an occupational therapy and an occupational therapy assistant work with. What are kind of the industry trends you've kind of seen over the last 5 years that have changed or developed from, you know, when you first started out?
Oh, over the last 5 years.
Or shorter.
I would say, honestly, I'm seeing some trends in increased use of home health. We have been in pediatrics for a long time. A lot of people know occupational therapy because of pediatric settings, either in the schools or in outpatient clinics.
Right.
And so I'm seeing, I think, more an increase in entrepreneurship, actually. Okay. So we're seeing more occupational therapists kind of start their own business.
Yeah.
Which is really cool because I think it gives people the opportunity to find and hone what they are really passionate about.
Mm. Yeah. Like you had mentioned the mental health side of it versus some of the other side. Mm-hmm.
So for example, there's an occupational therapist that we know who does home adaptions. So she'll literally work with a construction contract company and to help people stay in their homes longer by adapting and doing home modifications.
Right.
So she has her own business. She is able to set her own hours.
Yeah.
They've just started a family. So she can work when she needs to work and wants to work and still do what she loves and what she's passionate about. And so I think that entrepreneurship is really, I would say, growing more rapidly as we kind of progress through.
Yeah. Do you think that might be a part of the mental health aspect side of things as far as, you know, somebody maybe working in a hospital or working for a specific company? Do you think that might be because of some of the mental health aspect side of things as far as somebody maybe working in a hospital setting that just kind of gets fed up with the hours of that and has a real passion for something and they see fit for, like you said, the construction type of person, where they may have been going into in-home settings and not being able to get that person up and down their sidewalk or up and down out of their garage into their house?
I think it really lends to, because when you're in a more traditional setting, like skilled nursing facilities, things like that, like everything, when you're working for someone else, there are a lot of outcomes that they expect, like productivity,
right.
And things like that. And I think, on one hand, I think the productivity standard, especially in skilled nursing, is a little outrageous. And I think people get tired of that and working for someone else. So starting their own business allows them to still do what they love by being an occupational therapy practitioner, but they can set their own outcomes and they can set their own standards for productivity, which allows for a better work-life balance, perhaps, which allows for less burnout. you know, there's a lot of different reasons why I think we're seeing this. And I think it can be really, and I think when you're stuck within this framework of traditional clinic, you can't always focus on the whole person because there's a time frame that we're working with.
Right.
Because of reimbursement, it puts stipulations on things, and you may not be able to work on all the things that you think would be necessary because you're going to run out of time. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of components and a lot of things working in people's favor to move into a more entrepreneurial role.
Yeah. So like we've kind of talked about, you've been in the industry for 20 years now. What's something professionally that you're just the most proud of achieving so far in your career?
I think building two separate OTA programs has been a wonderful challenge, but it has grown me professionally. And I have really loved being a part of that growth. Like, it's just been really fun to kind of grow other people, but also grow myself in a process, because I'm responsible for faculty and I'm responsible for budgets and I'm responsible for, like, I did not go to school to talk budgets, not to the degree. Like, I can help someone else with their budget, but when it comes to a programmatic budget, I've had to learn a lot. So being able to grow throughout this process, I think, has been, we always talk about being a lifelong learner as an occupational therapist or a practitioner. And so that is something I hold on to with both hands, because I'm constantly learning. And if I'm not, then I'm bored. So being able to be that lifelong learner in whatever place that I am has been, I think, really important for me as a professional.
No, I think that really kind of leads itself right into, you know, like you said, being the lifelong learner as an OT, because there's always going to be changes and developments and how you're going to proceed with different individuals, and not everybody's the same. So you have to take one step. It's like being a teacher, the same thing, you know. You have to be able to take one lesson and adapt it five different ways for the different learners in the class.
Absolutely.
If you could go back and change something that may have been difficult, or you wish you would regret not doing, or, you know, maybe changing jobs, do you have anything along the way that you wish you could have gone back and changed or done something differently?
Honestly, I don't think I regret any of the choices I've made along the way. I tell students to do it differently than I did, but that's only because, you know, I did two private schools for my education. Mm-hmm. I would say go to community college, save some money. That would be the only thing I would probably do differently along the way, is do the community college and save some money and really think about it financially more than... because making the choice to do OT education is a commitment financially. Yes. And I think, you know, I've loved my education and I've loved everything that I've done and chosen to do. I tell students to do it differently because it was expensive. Mm-hmm. So going and doing, really doing your research on the financial responsibility that you're going to have at the end. I think it's just wise to be aware of that piece.
Yeah. And we kind of touched on this question a little bit earlier. You said, you know, your advisor you had back in college is kind of pushing you towards wanting to get your doctorate. Where do you kind of see yourself professionally in the next 10 years?
Well, hopefully having that doctorate completed. But because we are moving toward we are in a faculty shortage in the OT education, having that doctorate will just open up a lot of different opportunities. I would love to stay in OT education, whether it be OTA or OT. With a doctorate, I could do both. Maybe do some administrative kinds of things in higher education. I haven't quite decided. I don't know if I love it enough. Like, I love being in OT education, so the higher level of administration, I haven't quite decided on. And I've also even considered opening my own business. So, you know, there's a lot of different things kind of running through my brain. Right. I like the fact that I have options in this field. I can do a lot of different things, and I would be happy doing a lot of different things.
Yeah, that's good. So now we're going to kind of transition into a four-part question.
Okay.
We'll do each of them kind of individually, but in each of these four different scenarios, what advice would you have for students in these different moments in time? So the first one we're going to talk about is a high school student, maybe a junior or senior, that's looking at getting into OTA program or OT program. What advice would you have for that junior or senior?
I would say focus on your academics. Focus on your sciences and your maths. And focus on creating a very well-rounded individual. So do some volunteer work. And volunteer in different situations that are going to help you get into an OTA or OT program.
Right.
So volunteer with people with disabilities. Look at different organizations that may have occupational therapists in the organization, just to get a better idea of what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense by, you know, volunteering and getting some of that hands-on experience before you go into the program. You can really see what you're getting yourself set up for. Mm-hmm. Now let's look at somebody that's just starting the program, as far as they could be in an undergraduate or at a community college, looking at just taking some of those general classes, and then they stumble upon OTA program, and they look over at Cleveland and say, okay, well, I'm at Johnson or KCK, and Cleveland has this OT program. What advice would you have for a student like that is just starting into the program?
Get a hold of the program director. Come talk to me. I love talking to people about what we're doing, and about the profession as a whole. And a lot of times I get calls from students, should I do OTA or should I do OT? Well, it really depends on your goals. So getting a hold of a practitioner or the program director who can really explain the ins and outs of the educational process.
Right.
Do your research. Get online. I mean, there is so much information in YouTube out there, just in general, about different healthcare professions. Do your research. The American Occupational Therapy Association has lots of information about occupational therapy and the different programs. So you can literally look up schools in different locations to find out who's accredited and who's not and where they are. So do your research. I think with the information we have on the internet, there's no reason why you shouldn't know something before you start that process.
Right. Now let's look at a student that is in your program. They are out doing their rotations. They're getting ready to graduate. They could be 3 months away from graduating. They're looking for jobs, starting to apply, that kind of stuff. What advice would you have for that student as far as finishing their program and looking for jobs and applying?
I tell my students on a regular basis to find a job and get some solid experience for like the first 2 to 3 years. Just, you know, and it doesn't have to be in one setting. You can look at a variety of settings, but get that solid experience, pay off some student loans, you know, get paid well. And then after that, if you want to change settings or look at different opportunities, then you can go with your passion. Like, sometimes it's just really important to get the experience of being a practitioner and then grow into the passionate component or move into specialty areas.
Yeah.
Because then you have this foundation of what OT really looks like.
Yeah. As they're moving forward. The experience of the daily grind of going and working with all the different patients, the grind of learning all the different things that you have to do in case something happens while you're on the job.
Absolutely. The ins and outs of procedure and policy and reimbursement. Like, you're just, you have so much still to learn as a new grad. And that novice place of learning is kind of takes that 3 to 5 years to really kind of grow into more of a mature practitioner.
What can a starting off OTA expect as far as reimbursement pay for a first-time employee?
So for an OTA, new grads are making $40,000 to $45,000 a year,
okay,
roughly. And that's mostly in the metro. Every location in the United States is going to be a little bit different.
Right.
But in the Midwest, that's pretty solid,
okay,
place to start.
That's good. That gives us a good frame of reference as far as educational expenses compared to graduating expense or graduating reimbursement.
Right.
And then the last part of this question is somebody that's been in the job for 6 months, you know, they've started learning the policies and procedures. They've started getting used to the ins and outs of the daily expectancies of what they're supposed to be doing with their patients. What advice do you have for that person that's 6 months into the job?
Find a mentor. Find someone who you can kind of bounce ideas off of, whether that be someone you're currently working with, some other practitioner that you know from just networking, your professors from the program that you attended, whatever that is, find a mentor. Because they will help kind of guide you and give you a little more direction,
right,
as you're growing into your professional role.
Yeah, that works in pretty perfectly. So that person, that student that, you know, is interested in getting into OTA or OT, do you have any types of books that a student might recommend to read for them as a high school or early on in college? It doesn't have to be specific to like a, you know, anatomy and that kind of stuff, but just something that kind of gives them a glimpse as to what OTA is about.
Honestly, I don't have any specific books there. I would say look at books to understand the life of people with disability.
Okay.
So there are a lot of people who have written books on, like, their biographies, in a sense, of their experience having a disability.
Right.
So I would say understanding and getting an understanding of what that looks like for people can be really valuable.
Yeah.
And so kind of exploring, and that can go from... It can be of a lot of different people. So there's people who have written on mental health, on their mental health struggles and their journey within their mental health system. But there's also physical, like people who've had traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, stroke, all of those different kinds of things. So getting a better idea of what that looks like for people, I think, gives you more empathy, and it allows you to really kind of get an idea of what life is like living with, you know, some kind of disability or injury.
Yeah, absolutely. This next question is kind of a two-part question. It kind of goes into that looking in the life of, or, you know, general experience, but it's a, if you dislike blank or if you like blank, then being an OTA is not the right, or is the right career path for you. So I want you to fill in the blank and kind of discuss it. If you dislike blank,
mm-hmm,
being an OTA or an OT is not the right career path for you.
Oh, I mean, jokingly tell people, if you don't like poop and if you don't like being vomited on, you know, those kinds of things probably are not going to fit for you. A lot of times we get students who say, I wanted to be a nurse, but I couldn't handle putting in IVs, or I couldn't handle doing shots, those kinds of things. If those kinds of procedures are a challenge for you, even in OT, you're still going to come across that stuff. And so if you get a little queasy, that could be problematic. If you don't like people, this probably isn't going to be where you need to be because we're dealing with people.
Yep.
And so that, I would say, are the two big things.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense by, you know, just being around in that bubble and then, you know, the bubble both ways, dealing with the person as a person and dealing with the stuff that happens in the bubble.
If you get uncomfortable with people being in intense situations, it might be a challenge too, because no matter who we deal with, there are intense situations that come up.
Right.
And so if you get really uncomfortable in that situation, it might be a challenge for you as well.
So if you do like blank, then being an OTA might be the right career path for you.
If you like people, if you enjoy being creative and problem solving, yep, OT definitely would be a good fit for you. If you like teaching people new things, that could also be a great skill to have when working as an occupational therapy practitioner.
That's awesome. And then lastly, do you have a mantra or quote that you kind of live your teaching professional life or your OT professional life through?
You know, I actually just saw a Facebook post I posted, I don't know, years ago, but it says, life begins at the end of your comfort zone.
Okay.
And I tell my students on a regular basis that you need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Right.
I just tell people that because I think so much of the time we get very comfortable in our life. And when you start an educational journey, there's a lot of things that are going to make you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so if you can be okay with discomfort, you're actually going to thrive and you're actually going to be very successful in your life, because the only thing that we can all expect is change throughout our life. And so that works on a professional level. It works in a life level. And I think that we as human beings are constantly in motion and we're constantly changing, and that can get really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that, I mean, I think we've seen it significantly over the last 2 years in particular. We've all had to make adjustments. And so it's been hard for people to do that. But yeah, we've done it, and we're really resilient in that place. And I think that we can learn a lot from that resiliency.
Yeah, I like all that information right there, just by, you know, being uncomfortable with, or being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just every situation could be different, and could, you need to be able to adapt and overcome any type of situation that you may be dealt with. That's great stuff. Lastly, how can someone that's interested in the OTA program at Cleveland University learn more about the program or maybe get in touch with you over there?
So there's a few different options. There's our website, which is www.cleveland.edu. And there is a website for the OTA program. I am happy to share my contact information. We also have a Facebook group, so if you want to go search for the Facebook group, it's Occupational Therapy Assistant Program at CUKC.
Okay.
And then we also have an Instagram. I know Facebook's kind of old school these days with these young kids, but we also have an Instagram page, which is OTA Program CUKC.
Perfect.
So we like to post what we're doing in the program and what kinds of activities our students are participating in, and keep things, you know, fresh.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing, by, you know, being able to send that out about what you're doing in the class and showing the people and prospective students, you know, this is what we do and here's how we do it, and all that general information out there. Well, thank you so much for spending this time with us and talking us through the OTA and OT program and your experiences as an OT. We really appreciate it.
It was fun. Thank you so much for having me.
If you've made it this far into the episode, I want to thank you again for watching. Please subscribe, share, and comment below with any questions or comments you may have. If you're interested in more information about other professions within healthcare careers,
please visit healthsciencecoach.com and talk to your school counselor or academic advisor. As always, stay happy, healthy, and live life with passion.